This is Kelly Blewett. I'm joined by Kate Bollock, one of the authors of March Sisters on Life, Death, and Little Women, which released in the fall of 2019 from the Library of America. Kate is both a writer and a cultural critic. Her work has appeared in publications like the New York Times, The New Yorker, and The Atlantic. March Sisters is a creative work of literary criticism which brings together the voices of four diverse women, each of whom investigates one of the four March sisters. Kate had the task of unpacking the eldest March sister, Meg. Welcome, Kate. So tell us a little bit about the book. Each essay is both personal and critical, and I really like how you mixed that. Maybe you could unpack a little bit about how it is both critical and personal, because that's not exactly literary criticism. Personal reflection either. It's kind of a neat blend of both.
Yes. So a couple of years ago, an editor at the Library of America contacted me asking if I would like to write a personal essay about one of the sisters in Little Women for a book that they were publishing on the occasion of the 150th anniversary of Little Women. And so there were four different writers, and each were writing about a different sister. So I was given Meg, the oldest sister. We didn't discuss with each other what we were planning to do. We didn't know each other, but we all ended up writing essays that do fall into this strange hybrid category of being personal essay and history and biography and criticism, but not exactly literary criticism either. So in my case, you know, as I said, I was writing about Meg, and I went into the assignment thinking that I would write about Meg's marriage. Oh, let me back up for a second. I went into the assignment thinking that I would write about Meg as someone who got married early on in the book, and in that way explore Louisa May Alcott's own relationship to marriage, because she had never married, which, of course, I didn't know when I was 9 years old and first read the book, but I had learned about as an adult. And so I thought it would be very interesting to revisit the book looking through the lens of Alcott's political and personal attitudes toward marriage through the character of Meg. But instead, I was surprisingly ensorcelled by this whole other theme of Meg's life and character, which is her vanity and her relationship to clothing and what she looks like. And she's famously the prettiest sister and has always known that she was pretty and the most conventional of the four sisters. So yeah, it was kind of exciting to realize that there was this other theme that was in the moment more compelling to me, because I had been thinking a lot about women's relationships to clothing, and I had been reading about Virginia Woolf's thinking on the topic. She had written in a diary entry after she had sat for her portrait for Vogue magazine about what she called frock consciousness. It was something that she wanted to explore in her own writing, and she did in various works of her own fiction. And I just found that so compelling, frock consciousness. And so that had been on my mind, and then it was exciting for me to realize that Meg offered me an opportunity to think and write about this myself.
And you talk about in the essay that whenever you first started to go in, you thought, oh, she surely has this huge wedding scene. But in fact, the wedding is sort of buried, and the moments with Meg that you really choose to explore are probably well-known to readers or listeners, but maybe worth recapping. She goes to a kind of fancy dance. She gets there, and she ends up wearing the dress that is given to her by a friend, and then she runs into Lori, who is a boy character, a friend of the family's, and he disapproves of her new look. You found this to actually be quite parallel to a situation you had experienced in your own life, which, of course, you would have never known it whenever you were nine. And so you kind of tell these parallel stories. And I wondered if you could tell your version of Meg's story and the disapproving male on the other side and what that ultimately sort of made you think about in terms of fraught consciousness.
Okay, so in the book Little Women, Meg goes off to this fancy party. She only has one dress because she's poor. One of her rich friends lends her one of her fancy gowns, and it's the fanciest dress that Meg has ever worn. It suits her perfectly. She looks so beautiful. She looks like the dream of what she could look like that she'd always wanted, you know, like a princess. It was like a Cinderella moment, and she is suddenly transformed and looking at herself in the mirror and admiring how beautiful she looks and how exciting it feels to be dressed like this. And then she sails down to the party in this very confident, happy mood. But then when Lori sees her and tells her that he doesn't like how she looks, that he doesn't like fuss and feathers, as he puts it, mm-hmm. it's crushing. It's that he makes her feel completely ashamed that she would do something as ridiculous as put on a beautiful dress and look so feminine. When I read that moment now as an adult, I felt it on this like almost cellular level, because the same thing had happened to me when I was in my early 30s. I grew up near where Little Women was written, and I moved to New York in my late 20s, you know, and started to confront class and the requirements of dressing well for the kinds of jobs I was suddenly getting. And it was all very destabilizing to encounter, especially, I guess, at this kind of late date. I don't know. I feel like generally people encounter these kind of class discrepancies earlier. But anyway, there was this time in my early 30s, I was working at a glossy, fancy lifestyle magazine, and mm-hmm. there was a work party that I was going to. I had been invited by a man I was involved with, and my boss, whenever she went to work-related parties, she would call designers and have them send in dresses for her to borrow. So she always had a rack of beautiful designer dresses that she would slip in and out of to go off to these parties. And I, of course, had no idea what I was going to wear to this party. I didn't have anything nearly nice enough. So I figured I'd just go with what I had, which was a blue cotton dress that I had worn to my brother's rehearsal dinner. It felt like it was probably a little dowdy, but I couldn't afford to buy anything better. And then the day of the party, I arrived at work to discover that my boss had left two designer dresses on my desk for me to choose between to wear one to the party. And I brought them both home, and one was very me, by which I mean it looked kind of vintage retro. It was sort of prim. It wasn't like skin bearing or anything, the kind of dress that I was comfortable wearing. And the other one was really sexy, and it was black and had a plunging neckline, like, you know, down to my sternum, and clung, you know, very bodycon, as we put it. I put the dress on. I had never seen myself look like that before. Like, I didn't even realize that I could look so fancy and sexy and like a woman I would see on TV or something. And I was like, God, no way will I wear this dress. Like, I can't imagine going out looking so sexy. I'll wear this other dress that's more comfortable for me. But then at the very last minute, just as I was leaving my apartment, I changed my mind. I ran back inside. I put on this sexy black dress and I went off to the party and like nearly had a heart attack. I was so anxious about this. I mean, it's crazy to think that I was having such an extreme reaction, but it was unusual for me to present myself this way, and it made me feel really nervous. And when I got there, my date was there, and he looked me up and down with this cold look in his eye. And then he said, my, looks like someone took cocktail attire to the next level. And I was just covered in shame and embarrassment. Like, he'd seen right through me. I looked ridiculous. I couldn't pull this off. So when I was reading about Meg's experience, suddenly my own experience came rushing back to me. And so I was experiencing Meg's experience as if it were my own experience. It was really powerful. You know, then once I started thinking about it more and unpacking it, it was so interesting to see that Alcott had diagnosed a phenomenon that was as resonant then as it is now, you know, that this has not changed at all. And that there was this, in both cases, these men, the Lori in the book and the guy that was my date at this party, were both richer, more powerful, more established, had the authority of their male privilege, basically. And Lori was uncomfortable seeing Meg look beautiful and fancy and rich. It made her a threat. She suddenly had left the category that he was accustomed to thinking of her as residing within. And that's exactly what happened with my date. He just had never seen me look like that before, and it made him uncomfortable, and he wanted to make me feel uncomfortable and know that it was wrong that I did that, that I should stay in my place, basically.
I think sometimes we wonder why books like Little Women linger for so long, and there's probably been, since this book was published, several generations of women who have read the story, who have internalized it. And that's something that you guys really are able to unpack a little bit more in March Sisters, just all of the writers who have been inspired by the book and so forth. But I love your story because it really shows that personal dimension to reading and the way that books change over time as we change, the way that we engage those stories and what we see in them and what we bring to them and how we connect them to other aspects of our identity and what we're reading.
Yeah, it's a really exciting aspect of literature. And then a book like March Sisters specifically, which I think of as being like Middlemarch in this respect, it is very much a book that we can return to again and again and see ourselves as different sisters. You know, so when I was a kid, I identified with Joe because I was a tomboy and Joe was me, you know. And then as an adult, I suddenly am identifying with Meg, and I was also feeling myself identified with the mother, Marmy. And it's been exciting to all the outpouring of interest in Little Women because of the anniversary and the Greta Gerwig movie and just listening to women talk about that, about which sister they once were and which sister they are now. So it's the way that Alcott provides us with all of these different personalities and aspects of the female experience allows that book to be resonant over and over again. So I think that must explain why this book has never been out of print.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit about your experience of writing your essay for March Sisters on Life, Death, and Little Women. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for talking about it. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
I've been talking with Kate Bolick, one of the authors of March Sisters on Life, Death, and Little Women, which released in the fall of 2019 from the Library of America. More information on this title can be found on our website, wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Kelly Blewett.